Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Let the debate begin. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Wednesday, February 1st. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Now, Speaker Kevin McCarthy visits the White House today to discuss the nation's debt ceiling with President Biden. We'll have a preview.
A storm in the southeast has left tens of thousands without power. Meanwhile, an ice storm warning is in effect until tomorrow in parts of central Texas.
In business news, a record annual profit for Exxon. Wage increases slowing down, and the NASDAQ had its best January in 20 years.
And why does the man's name go first on almost all joint tax returns?
I think, you know, there's certainly some accountants who prepare returns and just kind of by habit put the man first. Sometimes it's whoever is earning more income, so sometimes that's men. Sometimes it's who's preparing the taxes will just put their own name in first.
Rich Rubin at the Wall Street Journal on joint tax returns. Tyre Nichols, the man who died in Memphis police custody, will be laid to rest today, 3 weeks after he was seen on video being severely beaten by cops after a traffic stop. In those 3 weeks, five police officers have been fired and charged with murder, and their specialized unit was disbanded. Two more officers have been suspended. Also fired, two Memphis Fire Department emergency medical workers and a lieutenant, and more discipline could be coming. Mr. Nichols' brother, Jamal Dupree.
My brother was the most peaceful person you ever met in your life. Most. He's never lifted a finger to nobody. Never raised his voice to nobody. If my brother was here today and he had to say something, he would tell us to do this peacefully.
Meanwhile, personnel files for the five Memphis police officers fired in Mr. Nichols' case show past disciplinary complaints. The files were released by the city last evening. For example, Officer Demetrius Haley in June of 2021 was accused of excessive and or unnecessary force following an arrest where he used force to put handcuffs on a woman. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy visits President Biden at the White House today to largely discuss the debt ceiling. As has been well documented, Republicans want spending cuts in exchange for raising the government's borrowing limit. The Biden administration says it will not negotiate the issue. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell previewing today's meeting.
We're all behind Kevin and wishing him well in the negotiation.
The White House wants to expose that the narrow House Republican majority lacks a cohesive plan to reduce spending. NBC News says experts say a plan to balance the budget over a 10-year horizon, as some conservatives have called for, would require less spending on the military, Social Security, or Medicare, or higher taxes. Republicans are divided on whether and how to target those pots of money, and Democrats are eager to make it politically painful for the GOP if they propose such cuts. As President Biden welcomes House Speaker Kevin McCarthy later today for a highly anticipated one-on-one meeting, the White House is making one thing clear: there will be no negotiations on the debt ceiling. More from Joey Garrison, White House reporter at USA Today. Joey, set the scene.
Yeah, President Biden is making the case that the debt ceiling, and again, this is the amount the U.S. can borrow and therefore spend, that it should be increased without any conditions, increased like it has been 78 times since 1960. Now, Republicans led by House Speaker Kevin McCarthy are pushing for spending cuts, though they've not specified what kind of cuts they want to see. And so, you know, that's sort of the standoff that we have right now. The president or the White House issued a memo that outlines two questions that they want to pose to Kevin McCarthy. One, will you commit to the principle that the U.S. will never default on its obligations if the debt ceiling isn't raised? The U.S. for the first time could go into default. And two, when will the Speaker and House Republicans release their budget, release their plan for spending cuts?
Yeah, I guess I was going to ask the same thing. Since Republicans haven't outlined any specifics, how do they go into this meeting with the president, or how does Mr. McCarthy go into the meeting without some sort of specific plan?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, what McCarthy is arguing is, hey, in 2011, this was when during the Obama administration, back when Biden was vice president, Biden actually convened with a bipartisan group of lawmakers Republicans at the time who were had just taken over the House, who were pushing for spending cuts back then. So McCarthy's saying, hey, there is a precedent for this. Now, that same episode, and you probably recall that, where it went really to the brink of a potential economic collapse and going into default. Biden came out of that, according to people close to him, out of that episode, learning a lesson, and that is to not negotiate spending cuts and other things, priorities when it comes to the debt ceiling issue. Basically, the whole situation, according to Obama, Biden, folks close to them, turned really messy. The U.S. Bond rating was downgraded. It led to the stock market plunging. And so they don't want to repeat that. The White House is that sort of situation.
We're speaking with Joey Garrison, White House reporter at USA Today. When Republicans had control of the House under former President Trump, were spending cuts part of the discussions there?
Yeah, that's one of the arguments made up by the White House is three times when President Trump was in office, Democrats voted along with Republicans to raise that debt ceiling. And so that's going to be one of the points that I'm sure Biden is going to bring up in his argument or in his meeting with McCarthy. Now, what the White House thinks, this is all part of kind of a larger strategy by the White House. The idea is, hey, keep daring McCarthy and Republicans to reveal which domestic programs they want to cut. Now, the White House keeps on citing Medicare and Social Security as two of those. McCarthy says those are not on the table. But the administration, the Biden administration, is counting on any cuts to be so unpopular that enough House Republicans will abandon their demands and Congress can take action. So that's why you were hearing Biden say, hey, show me your plan, because they think it's going to be unpopular among the public and therefore with some Republicans.
Finish up, Joe, if you would. When President Biden releases his budget proposal in early March, will that have an effect on the discussions for the debt ceiling?
Well, essentially that's going to set the parameters from the White House perspective of what they think should be funded. And I think what you're going to see is when the White House puts that out on March 9th, they're going to say, hey, Speaker McCarthy, now it's your turn. Show us what you want to pay for. And again, the question remains is when McCarthy will outline specifically what they want to touch. I mean, in terms of spending cuts. I mean, the Medicare Social Security again keeps getting cited as a from the White House. They're pointing to past proposals from Republicans to raise the eligibility age to 70 years old, which of course would reduce the size of the program significantly. The Republicans, led by McCarthy, say that we're not going to cut those two programs. But until they show what their plans are, I mean, the White House is going to just point out to those past proposals to touch them. And so that's kind of where we are right now.
Thanks, Joey. Joey Garrison, White House reporter at USA Today.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor, every blank page is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with tools and expertise to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. For advice on smart PCs powered by Intel vPro that's built for business, call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us, and welcome into Wednesday. Embattled New York Congressman George Santos is recusing himself from his committee assignments amid multiple investigations into his finances and other issues. The newly elected Republican first came under scrutiny after the New York Times published a bombshell investigation in December, indicating that much of his resume appeared to have been manufactured, including claims that he owned numerous properties, was previously employed by Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, and had graduated from Baruch College. He also lied about how his mother was at the World Trade Center during the 9/11 terrorist attacks. He met with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy Monday evening. Democrat Pete Aguilar of California.
We have said from the very beginning that George Santos is not fit to serve on any committees. Republicans defended him initially.
Mr. Santos has repeatedly said he plans to explain the inconsistencies, but he has not followed through on those promises. 19 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Winter weather is bringing ice to a wide portion of the country, causing the cancellation of more than 1,700 flights nationwide, bringing traffic to a standstill on an interstate in Arkansas, knocking out power to thousands of Texans. Lee Church is with the Little Rock Public Works Department.
I don't like this because it's trickier than snow. Snow you can maneuver in better. It's harder to stop on this.
As the ice storm advances eastward, watches and warnings stretch from the western heel of Texas all the way to West Virginia.
Number two.
The family of Tyree Nichols will lay him to rest today, 3 weeks after he was beaten to death by Memphis police after a traffic stop. In those 3 weeks, five police officers have been fired and charged with murder, and two more have been suspended. Vice President Kamala Harris will attend today's funeral services.
Number three.
A man accused of kidnapping and torturing a woman in Oregon this month has died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound following an hours-long standoff with authorities. 36-year-old Benjamin Foster died in the hospital after law enforcement had surrounded a property in Grants Pass, Oregon, where he was believed to be hiding under a house. The search for Foster began January 24th after officers found a woman who had been bound and severely beaten inside a Grants Pass home. Authorities had been searching around the clock for Foster, who had a prior relationship with the victim. Nikki Haley, a former South Carolina governor and U.S. ambassador to the U.N., intends on February 15th to launch a White House bid challenging former President Trump for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination. A critic of Trump before becoming his representative at the U.N. for 2 years, Haley is expected to formally make her announcement in Charleston. Nothing quite like a hit show to revive an old song. Streaming of Linda Ronstadt's 1970 single Long, Long Time on Spotify has spiked nearly 5,000% after it was used in the most recent episode of HBO's The Last of Us. The song's also getting new life on TikTok, where viewers have used the tune as the backdrop to weepy reaction videos or in tributes to the show.
Very good. Thank you, Jen. When it comes to taxes, there are two lines for names on Form 1040. Somebody has to go first. Somebody has to go second. Maybe knowing something about the order we choose can help us make a deduction about ourselves. Why are men's names overwhelmingly listed first? Insight from Richard Rubin, tax policy reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Rich, is it ego, convenience, habit?
Some of all of that. I think, you know, there's certainly some accountants who prepare returns and just kind of by habit put the man first. Sometimes it's whoever is earning more income. So sometimes that's men. Sometimes it's who's preparing the taxes will just put their own name in first. And the other thing is the IRS tells you not to change from year to year. So once you kind of set it one way based on, you know, who did the taxes in 1995 when you got married or whatever, then it kind of stays that way. So it's changing, but it changes relatively slowly. Among newly joint filing couples in 2020, about three quarters of them still put the man first.
Oh, I didn't realize that. And you referenced that, the bureaucratic inertia. Why does it matter from 1 year to the next when the IRS says you should keep it the same way as last year?
I think basically their system looks for the first name on the return and that first person's social security number. So, you know, that is really what keys it. And so they can eventually find it because both social security numbers are on there. But it can just be a little bit difficult to get there in the first place.
We're speaking with Rich Rubin, tax policy reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Who Goes First on Your Joint Tax Return? Probably not the woman. That's the case for Vice President Kamala Harris. You said she goes second to her husband.
Right. And the vice president's office didn't comment for the story. I think one thing we do note is it for other couples, it can be if you have one spouse who makes estimated tax payments. So is in some sort of job where it's not salaried, but it's more of a business, it's easier to identify that return when the payments are coming from the person who's on the first line of the return. So okay. I think sometimes that might be the case for her. We don't really know. But yes, in fact, the second gentleman is the first taxpayer.
How about that? And then there are some politicians, though, who do it in reverse with the woman first. What'd you find?
Yeah, well, I just went back and looked quickly through the candidates who ran for president in 2020 because we have all the returns. And so a couple of senators, Kirsten Gillibrand of New York and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, have are first on their returns. And Montana Governor Steve Bullock, our former Montana governor, had his wife's name first as well.
Wow. This University of Michigan researcher you spoke to also is kind of look behind the veil on some of this. What did he find?
You know, I think some of the things we found interesting is there's geographic differences. So here in the District of Columbia, where I am, the only place in the country where fewer than 80% of joint returns with opposite sex couples have the man first. On the other end of the scale are Iowa, New Jersey, and Utah, where you have more than 90% of returns filed that way. I don't really know why. And then they also found that, you know, if you tried to look at, like, what characteristics are associated with those returns, man first returns tend to have more charitable contributions. They also tend to have riskier investments and some more evidence of non-compliance with the tax code. So take that for what you will.
There was a tax preparer in your story, too, who referenced something about the phrases or the words taxpayer and spouse. Does that gum things up?
Yeah, that's just the way the form is written. It's written as to a person who is filling it out, and you, the person who are filling it out, is the taxpayer, and then the other person is the spouse. And obviously, that's sort of approach worked in a phase of our country where you might have had, say, one spouse who was doing all the income and handling all the finances. You know, a lot of couples now are, of course, much more 50-50 egalitarian about these things.
Thanks, Rich. Richard Rubin, tax policy reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you're financing the holiday season on credit cards, Lightstream is here to help. A credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream can help you pay off your credit cards and lock in a low fixed interest rate. Rates start at 7.99% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. Get up to $100,000 with no added fees, and you might even get your money on the day you apply. Just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. To get it, visit lightstream.com/deal. That's LIGHTSTREAM, lightstream.com/deal. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 7.99% to 23.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit, terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/deal for more info. lightstream.com/deal.
Advancing the conversation, identifying trends, and informing the world. This is America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, February 1. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Biden and McCarthy meet to discuss the debt ceiling. Tens of thousands without power thanks to wintry weather in Texas and Arkansas. Best start to the year for the NASDAQ since 2001. Actor Alec Baldwin charged with involuntary manslaughter for a shooting on a movie set. Sean Payton to coach the Broncos. Niners defensive coordinator D'Amico Ryans to coach the Texans. A rare green comet zipping past Earth today. And scientists try to bring back the dodo a la the woolly mammoth. That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Discover. With Discover, you can redeem your rewards for cash in any amount at any time. Learn more at discover.com/redeem rewards. Terms apply. Retail purchases have fallen in 3 of the past 4 months. Spending on services, including rent and haircuts, was flat in December, the worst monthly reading in nearly a year after adjusting for inflation. Harriet Torrey, economics reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says as consumers, we are starting to freak out. Harriet, what are we seeing?
Well, we're just seeing a takedown in a number of measures that we look at for consumer spending. So, for instance, retail spending, that's purchases of goods and furniture and cars and things like that, that's fallen in 3 of the past 4 months. And then we got data on overall spending, so including spending on services, and that was down in December and revised lower as well for November. So it just seems like the consumer ended the year and the holiday season on a pretty weak footing. You know, they really pulled back on their spending, and that is a very worrying sign for the US economy when about 2/3 of GDP is driven by consumer spending.
Yeah. Well, we had a good run, didn't we? We were sprinting for a long time, it seems. Why did we suddenly pull back on the reins?
Well, I think there are a number of factors that have been around for a while, but are just sort of coming together at this point in time. So, for instance, inflation is still pretty high. I mean, we've seen it come down from where it was in the summer, but it is still, you know, prices are still going up. They're just going up a bit more slowly. And it is pinching consumers. They are feeling the pain. You know, those grocery bills are getting more expensive every month. And yes, we've seen wage growth, but by and large, wages haven't kept pace with inflation. So people just feel kind of poor. And then the cost of debt has gone up, of course. You know, if you have a credit card balance, you're paying more to service your debt every month. If you're thinking about buying a house or a car or a new appliance on credit, the cost of borrowing money has gone up, and that's, you know, and that's hard for people. And then the other thing that we've seen is that, you know, consumers had very, very strong and robust savings built up during the pandemic when they were working from home and couldn't spend as much as usual, and of course also getting a lot of government stimulus and unemployment benefits.
We're speaking with Harriet Torrey, economics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's written how the U.S., the engine of the U.S. economy, and that's consumer spending, is starting to sputter. You spoke to this young man in Minnesota, 32-year-old Benjamin DeLong. What's he going through, Harriet?
Yeah, so Benjamin, like many of the people in the story, are just having you know, starting to see these things all mount at the same time. He did have a nice savings account of about $3,700 during the pandemic, and he's now down to 3 cents. And so he's had to dip into his savings to cover the cost of groceries, and he's been trying to come up with some new ideas to keep costs in check. For instance, he and his partner decided to buy some pigs with some other families to raise the pigs themselves and you know, use the meat for their table, which saved them money. But it's, you know, this is a sign that consumers are struggling and they're stretched. And now, of course, he's worried about layoffs, and, you know, people are worried what happens if I don't have an income anymore.
On the other side of that, or still part of that equation, I guess, is another example. You got the guy who runs the tattoo shop in New York City. What's he seeing?
Yeah, so Mikhail Anderson was an interesting example, because, you know, tattoos, of course, are quite a discretionary thing. You know, it's an expensive purchase. It's something that you probably only do a couple of times in your life. And what he saw was, you know, of course, his shop had to shut down during COVID lockdowns. And as soon as it opened, he was just overrun with demand. You know, people really wanting to book tattoo sessions. They were flush with stimulus money, and he was booked out until kind of, you know, around November of last year, when people just started to call and say, look, I can't afford to do, you know, the usual 5-day session to get a big and elaborate tattoo. I can only afford to get, you know, a 1-day session.
Does any of this hint any more or less at a recession?
Well, this is the big question. I mean, a lot of economists do expect a recession next year. I mean, the Wall Street Journal produces a survey every quarter, and we ask economists to put a probability on a recession in the next 12 months. And in January, their probability was 61%, which by historical standards is very high. So most economists are expecting that in, you know, the first or second quarters, employers will start cutting jobs, and that growth will turn negative, at least for a while. But it's not inevitable that there is a recession. There are, of course, things that could change that. The Fed is trying to engineer a soft landing. They want to tamp down inflation, but also, you know, keep the economy on an even keel. And if they manage to achieve that and avoid a recession, that would be great for everyone.
Thanks, Harriet. Harriet Torrey, economics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect? The taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Wednesday. In the coming weeks, Netflix will further crack down on users who share their account with people outside their households. Netflix wants them to pay a bit extra to continue sharing. The company has even launched a tool that lets you see where and when your account has been accessed. As Sarah Krause at the Wall Street Journal found out, the results can be as surprising as a plot twist in a Netflix series. Sarah, start with the basics.
Netflix is gearing up for a big strategic shift, which is that it will begin cracking down on password sharing, which it has encouraged for many years. And there's different stages of its plans to do that. It will eventually, sort of pull the trigger and implement a paid sharing policy. But in the early stages, some of what it did was release tools to users that make it easier for them to either push moochers off of their account or give people who are sharing someone else's account the option to easily transfer their past viewing history to their own account. And so one of those tools for account owners is this device management dashboard. And basically that lets you see the devices that are logged into your account and the last time they watched something on your account. So if you were to pull up that list and see devices that are not familiar or that are based in places that are far flung, perhaps it means that your credentials have been shared farther and wider than what you thought.
And surprise, you found some of those people who encountered this. How about this guy from Brooklyn, Martin Ringline? What did he find?
So he found that he was logged in at a couple of different places that he hadn't realized. One was he had sold his Tesla about a year earlier and had logged into Netflix there, but hadn't ever been logged out of it. And so whomever bought that car through the service that he had sold it through was still enjoying his Netflix account for free. He had also logged in at an Airbnb in Asheville, North Carolina, and had stayed there and realized when he looked at this dashboard that that TV was still logged in and there were still strangers watching shows on his account that didn't match his typical taste. For example, there was like a Cocomelon episode or something that was far outside what he would normally gravitate towards.
Oh, that's something. We're speaking with Sarah Krause, streaming reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Guess Who's Using Your Netflix Account? You might be surprised. You also talked to this young guy in Scotland, this Luke Stronach. What did he experience?
So he discovered the sharing somewhat differently. He noticed that the viewing recommendations on his account didn't match his tastes. And for instance, it recommended How to Build a Sex Room when he usually watches things like The Crown or It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So that sort of shift in genre raised a red flag for him. And he realized that when that stranger that had been using his account changed the profile name to a dorm room number, he realized he had logged in on a shared TV in a dorm where he had previously lived and again hadn't logged out. And so it was being used by the new residents. And so he was able to then go in and change his password and shut that down.
Is that what the fix is? All you have to do is change your password?
That has long been a fix. The difference with this new dashboard that lets you look at devices is there's an easy sign out button within it. So you can see the full layout of the devices that are logged into your account. And if you see something that's fishy or that strikes you as wrong, you just disconnect that device.
You know, what struck me too is that you said some subscribers to Netflix are actually embracing this crackdown. How so and why?
Yeah, one of the more surprising findings in this process and talking to lots of people about how they feel about the upcoming password sharing crackdown is some people can't wait for it because they feel like sharing on their account has gotten out of hand, but they care a lot about the friends and family that are using it and they don't want to have conflict. They don't want to have a hard conversation with these people to say, hey, I can't enjoy my account anymore because every time you guys are all using it, there's too many simultaneous streams and I'm not able to use my own account.
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Krause, reporter at The Wall Street Journal.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor, every blank page is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with tools and expertise to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. For advice on smart PCs powered by Intel vPro that's built for business, call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Don't forget we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Winter weather is bringing ice and snow to wide portions of the country, canceling more than 1,700 flights nationwide and snarling highways. At least two people died on slick roads in Texas, Governor Greg Abbott.
The Public Utilities Commission expects to see some local outages as a result of icing of electric infrastructure and power lines.
Emergency responders rushed to hundreds of vehicle crashes across states from Texas to West Virginia, and people being urged to stay off the roads.
Number two.
President Biden will press House Speaker Kevin McCarthy today to commit to avoiding a default by the U.S. as the two meet on the debt ceiling and other issues. McCarthy's take on the meeting.
I would think if you listen to the president in the past, he always thought people should sit down and negotiate, especially on the debt ceiling. They literally called those negotiations the Biden talks. I would expect that same thing to happen.
McCarthy has said Republicans want to cut spending in exchange for raising the debt limit, but has not detailed the GOP's wish list.
Number three.
The State Department says Russia has violated the new START treaty, cutting long-range nuclear arms, by refusing to allow on-site inspections and rejecting Washington's request to meet to discuss its compliance concerns. The State Department's finding that Moscow is in non-compliance with the accord marks the first time the U.S. has accused Russia of violating the treaty, which entered into force in 2011. As expected, prosecutors have filed involuntary manslaughter charges against Alec Baldwin in the fatal shooting of a cinematographer on the set of the movie Rust in New Mexico. Similar charges were also filed in Santa Fe against the woman who handled guns on the set. Imagine you're playing hide-and-seek. You hide inside a container, fall asleep, and wake up in another country. That's what happened last month to a 15-year-old Bangladeshi boy. While unloading containers off a Bangladeshi ship on January 17th, Malaysian dock workers were shocked to find a confused and emaciated boy step out of a container. They suspected he was a victim of a human trafficker and called police, but after sorting out language barriers, authorities determined the boy chose to hide in the container, accidentally locked himself in, and fell asleep. He was in there for 6 days.
Could you imagine?
No.
Hey, kid, listen, you won. You won the game that day.
That's crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The greatest hide-and-seek victory ever. The list of extinct species that a genetics engineering company wants to bring back to life is growing. The latest addition, the dodo. Colossal Biosciences gave life to real-world visions of Jurassic Park in 2021 with its mission of bringing back the woolly mammoth. The company, which has offices in Boston, Dallas, and Austin, Texas, said it also planned to de-extinct the Tasmanian tiger. USA Today says this new project announced yesterday would bring back the dodo, the last of which was killed in 1681. The birds, larger than turkeys, were killed for food. Pigs and other animals brought to the island ate dodo eggs. Meanwhile, Colossal's biotech and genetic engineering teams are combining woolly mammoth and elephant DNA to recreate a next-generation mammoth capable of surviving in the Arctic and helping restore that ecosystem. The company says embryos will be implanted into female elephant surrogates, with the first calves expected in 5 years. A similar process is being used with the Tasmanian tiger's genome and similar mammal DNA to bring back that predator. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.